You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 30th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this final day of September. Can you believe it? September is almost over. We flipped the calendar again to October tomorrow. And there's still so much going on in the sports world. Football's going crazy in the high school level, college level, pro level. Postseason baseball is underway and a whole lot more. Basketball season's right around the corner. I mean, just so much happening in the world of sports. We got a lot to get to on this Tuesday afternoon. Yesterday's show was wild, and I expect today to be no different, where we will be talking a lot of Auburn. We'll be talking other teams and schools and scores around the SEC, dive into some postseason baseball a little bit as well, and of course, whatever is on your mind. But Christian, happy Tuesday, sir. How are you on this final day of September?
Yeah, happy Tuesday, man. It's postseason baseball time. I said it on the way out yesterday. It's the best time of year. Even if the Braves aren't in it, man, it's still so fun to watch. You're seeing some big-time names take the mound here today. You saw Scooble and Gavin Williams going at it. They're still going at it in a 2-1 game. You're seeing the Cubs and Padres go after it here in about 6 minutes, and there is postseason baseball all day today for the wild card. We're going to talk a little bit about that here to wrap up our number one. We're also going to dive into some scores around the SEC and from college football, because yesterday was much more of a emotional get-out rant day. We didn't really have time to look around the college sports world, and we're going to do that to start the show here this afternoon, again, before we dive into a little MLB postseason. But don't worry, hour number two is going to be straight back to Auburn football. Some more quotes to go over, as there was Tiger Talk last night. We have some more stats that we want to read that are continuing to bleed through social media. And then kind of just the conversation of where do we go from here? What do we need to see in the bye week, if there is anything to see in the bye week before Georgia comes to town? And again, everybody's seeing those dates, either the 6, 6:30 or 6:45 slate. Still waiting to see the exact time, but everybody knows the night game in Jordan-Hare. So it should be a very, very fun show here today.
Yeah, phone lines are open. No guests today. We typically have at least one, sometimes two, but today we are wide open on this Tuesday afternoon. So that means the phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. If you have thoughts from yesterday that you didn't get in, or today, or anything you want to discuss moving forward, you can give us a call right now. Phones are back up and functional, which is nice. 334-321-1390 is the number to get you through to us. 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn and Texas A&M. Your thoughts on Auburn as a whole. If you want to talk football, basketball, baseball, you name it, we got you here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Plus, our text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067.
With nice messages only.
Yeah, nice messages only. Some of you fell into that category. Others of you did not. And that's okay. We understand that
it's okay.
It's an emotional time.
I was speaking about
that one. Yeah. No, that one was fine. That one was fine.
There I sent were a some, message with my phone.
There were some that weren't all that polite, but it's okay.
Well, apologies. I was joking. I was talking about mine.
I mean, people are emotional. They're fine. Believe me, I don't take it personal. I understand what's going on. So, again, we want to start the show Looks like we're going to start by getting to the phone lines, but there was a lot that happened in college football this weekend outside of Auburn and Texas A&M, and we're going to get to that in just a moment.
We are, yeah, but we have our first phone call here of the afternoon, and Mike from Auburn, you're on the line. Happy Tuesday, sir.
What's going on, fellas?
What's on your mind, man?
I don't know if we got enough time. So, man, I'm telling you what, this game is pivotal for Hugh Freeze, in my opinion. And, yeah, I know we're going up against Georgia, and they're typical Georgia, maybe not quite where they've been. I think our defense has a chance to kind of squelch them for a while. But I'm a little worried about the running game because that's what they focused on, and they've been running the ball pretty good. But obviously the big concern is our offense, and if they don't come out with a better plan and he don't stick to the running game, I think it's going to be the beginning of the end for this because I don't see development. I don't see improvement once again through the season, and I know it's like beating the dead horse sitting over there with the buzzards on it, but it feels like Gus Malzahn 2.0, and I don't know, man. I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people, Mike, that between now and the Georgia game coming up next Saturday night inside of Jordan-Hare, I think there's a lot of people that are going to start ramping up the conversations, and honestly, we'll probably end up doing the same of – is that the breaking point, right? Is that the game where everybody's going to put their eggs in that basket and say, okay, Hugh, if you are going to prove you're the man, or if you're going to prove that you can get it done at Auburn and truly turn that corner, I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to put that narrative on this Georgia game by the time it gets to us next Saturday.
I think he almost has to. He's got 2 weeks. If there's some bumps and bruises, they've got time, but he's got 2 weeks to prepare for this game. And I don't know, the last couple of times I wasn't too sure about what the product was like after 2 weeks off, but in this case, maybe it's what he needs. But it's weird. It seems to me the best game he's called all year is the first one. And since then, it's just been a kind of pulling back on the reins, going back to what he was doing last year.
Right.
I don't want to blame it all on Jackson Arnold because, to be honest with you, a lot of this, in my opinion, is play calling and game plan, sticking to game plan development or either development of the game plan itself. It just doesn't look like the same plan of attack that we had, at least from the outset of the season. And that really worries me. And that's why it looks like what we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hope it's better. I hope we are much better prepared. We need to win this game. And I know that's a tall task for a team that's coming off two losses, but you got a bye week. You should be fresh. And I think we need to go after them like it's the last game of the season and we've got all our eggs in the basket. Because to me, when you look at the schedule, it doesn't get any easier. So, y'all have a great day. I appreciate you taking my phone call.
Yeah, man. Always appreciate you calling in and being a part of the show. 334-321-1390. The phone lines are open all show long, so come on in and give us your thoughts. And I have a couple of things here, Christian. One, with Georgia coming up, right, and thankfully, this is not coming up in the next 4 days, right? You do have the bye week to – according to Hugh Freeze, they're going to reevaluate everything on the offense, which, whatever
what
that's worth, right?
What is that
I mean,
word?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the problem, though, right? And that's where, not picking on Mike here, the problem is going into this bye week. Does anybody have confidence in Hugh Freeze in this staff to do what it takes to do what is necessary to fix the problems on this team? I haven't seen it.
You're not seeing it week by week. So what makes you think another week of not playing a game is going to do it?
And since when has a bye week helped Hugh Freeze since he's been at Auburn?
That was my exact point. Looking at the 2024 season, last year we did not get the bye week in between Oklahoma and Georgia. You played Oklahoma at home where you lost 27-21 because of the pick six late, and then you went straight to Athens the following week and lost 31-13, and then the bye week hit. And you felt like, okay, You've now hit the bye week. That's when you really need to learn a lot about your team. You then went to Como 2 weeks later, and nothing changed.
Right.
You lose 21-17 in a game that Missouri, very similar to what A&M did last week, just tried to give you the game. Brady Cook went to the hospital and came back and still found a way to win the game because Auburn just simply said, no, it's okay. It's okay. We don't want to find a win, although every single question led to something that needed to be done during the bye week, hoping that that would get figured out. You saw the exact opposite, and as soon as it didn't work, as soon as plan A didn't work that you figured out during your bye week, that 8-play drive that you scripted out and perfected during walkthroughs, as soon as you got punched in the mouth and you were supposed to pick up 13 on that play, but instead you only pick up 4 and it's 2nd down and 6, you throw everything to the side and go right back to what you're used to doing. That's what you saw last year after a bye week.
And that was Missouri. This is Georgia. This is Kirby Smart, who's also going to be coming off of, not a bye week, but they're coming off something even more beneficial for a Kirby Smart-led team. They're coming off a loss.
Yeah, they're coming off a loss and then Kentucky.
They're going to destroy Kentucky. They are going to release a demon against Kentucky. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then Georgia, who will use it as fuel, people doubting them and saying, oh, watch out, possible upset, blah, blah, blah. Man, Georgia showed on Saturday that they're a beatable team. They're still very talented, and they're still very good. And if you don't go down 2 scores early, you probably win the football game, right? And the fact that Alabama did not score in the second half and you still lost the game shows that Georgia is not what Georgia usually is. So Auburn has an opportunity coming up in 2 weeks when the Dogs come to town under the lights of Jordan-Hare to completely flip this thing around. But the issue that I have, and again, phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. A couple of texts we're going to get to in just a moment as well. The problem I have, Christian, is the swing in mentality from the start of the season to where we are now with the Georgia game in particular. Right? We talked about how big of an opportunity this would be for Auburn to turn the corner, get over the mountain, and really set yourself up heading into a true college football playoff run. And we were speaking in hopeful, yes, right? We were speaking in a language and a tone of, man, you have a chance to do something really special. You beat Baylor, you split Oklahoma and Texas A&M, you beat Georgia at home, and you're full on, full head of steam, train coming down the tracks heading to the college football playoff, right? That's how we talked about this schedule preseason. But listen to the phone call we just had. We're on the verge of putting this game in a category where someone's job is on the line. We're on the verge of putting the entire program's reputation again up for grabs in one singular game against an opponent that outmatches you, that out-talents you, against a coach that's just flat out better than you. That's a bad spot to be. And that's a whiplash type of swing from what we thought this season could be to where Auburn currently stands as it is right now.
Yeah, and it's frustrating too, because going back to the beginning of this season, you look at it and it's, okay, 4-1 would be ideal. That's kind of what the hope was, right? You beat Baylor and then mm-hmm. you split Oklahoma and A&M.
Yeah.
We sat there and said 3-2 is okay. 2-3 is unacceptable. You're now at that point where you've hit the bye week. You're 3-2. And that's where a conversation, you don't expect it to happen back in July when we're having these conversations, because if you just go and you tell me that Auburn is 3-2 at the point of losses at Oklahoma and at A&M by a combined 13 points, I'd tell you that Auburn would be in a decent spot, that Auburn feels okay. And that's where the comparison comes in, because if you didn't watch the game and you only see that it's a 13-point deficit in those two games, you feel okay.
Right.
But then you actually sit down and you watch all 120 minutes and see how poor everything looked on the offensive side of the football. It's so crazy how fast things can flip. Because, again, when you're looking at it, Auburn's win total was 7.5, and they were projected to go over. They were maybe supposed to beat Baylor. They weren't supposed to beat Oklahoma or A&M. So when you look at everything in the blender and you look at it with the big picture, Auburn's still at a spot where they can still do what they want to do. But going and looking at how those losses took place and how easily 4-1 and even 5-0 could be and could feel for this game inside Jordan-Hare, now you're at the point of, okay, it's at Jordan-Hare. We need Jordan-Hare to come through again. It's not, we need the offense or the defense to come through again. If this game was in Athens,
oh God,
what would the mentality be of this team right now?
It'd be over. The season would be over.
Jordan-Hare is the one thing in this game that's bringing confidence to this team. Or the fan base, rather.
And to build on that, too, and I think it's a really good point, the idea that Auburn is 3-2, but not every record is the same, right?
No.
Not every record is built the same, comparing two separate teams or even comparing the same team, right? To what you were talking about with, if you are a box score viewer, you look at Auburn's 3-2 record and somebody says, okay, you got a nice one on the road at Baylor. You beat the two teams you were supposed to, and then you lost two tough games on the road to top 15, borderline top 10 teams in the SEC, right? You look at those two and you say, okay, Auburn's building in the right direction, going in the right direction, building, getting better. You just lost two heartbreakers on the road to basically two top 10 teams in the SEC.
Right.
But that's not how this record is.
No.
That's the problem here. That's the issue, is that record is not just the record. The box scores are not just the box scores, and here we are again putting basically the future of the program in one game again, which some would say isn't fair, and I somewhat
it might
agree.
Not be, but it's also, you feel like it's a, this is the catalyst of a three-game stretch.
Right, and that's what's really tough about this. Before we get to the phone lines, let me pose this question to you. It's a hypothetical one that physically we can't do anything about. If Auburn was same record right now in this bye week, Auburn was 3-2, but they had lost to Baylor in the opener and beat either Oklahoma or Texas A&M. I'll even give you your choice on which one Auburn would have won. If Auburn was 3-2 right now, same record, but had lost to Baylor and beat one of those SEC teams on the road, would you feel better about where they are right now?
100%.
Why?
Shows that adjustments can be made middle of the season rather than needing 8 months of an offseason to get a win.
Does it matter which game it was?
No.
Oklahoma or A&M?
I mean, if you had to pick one, I would pick A&M from a standpoint of being able to build off of that before a bye week. But even if it was one of the two and the other game stayed the exact same, you'd sit there and say, okay, you're not at a terrible spot. It shows that midseason adjustments can be made. You just could not find a way to get the other win on the road. Before we head to break, let's get to the phone lines one more time. Dan in Auburn, you're on the line. Happy Tuesday, sir.
Appreciate it. You know, when I look at the record, or the schedule at the beginning of the season, I picked Texas A&M as being our hardest game. It's what I thought in my mind, because you're coming off a tough Oklahoma team. You know, that's going to be a battle.
Yeah.
And then you got Texas A&M, who lost us last year in the overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they had to have us circled for sure. And then they had 2 weeks to prepare, and everyone wants to say Texas A&M doesn't have a good defense, but their coach is a defensive coordinator,
yes,
defensive-minded coach, and they do have a ton of talent. So if you give them plenty of time to dissect a struggling offense on the road that can't hear or anything, I mean, you know, I thought we were going to lose that game regardless. The thing that's frustrating is the fact that our defense has played so well, and we could easily be 5-0 right now if we just had some semblance of an offense. And obviously the Oklahoma game was I think if we'd have won the Oklahoma game like we should have, I still will say we got screwed over on, then maybe the Texas A&M game would be an anomaly and we just wouldn't worry about it as much. I think we can beat Georgia. Georgia is very beatable this year.
I agree that Georgia's beatable.
I think our defense can, with our defensive line and our pass rushers, I think we can shut them down. Okay, we just got, Hugh Freeze and the offensive staff has just got to just reevaluate and figure out what we're doing. Everyone else in the world seems to know what we did wrong. You'd like to think that maybe they can figure it out too.
You'd like to think.
And just come out with a good game plan on offense, put 400 yards on the board, and we'll win that game, and everyone will be like, okay, here we go. You know what? We can turn this around, you know. But it just – they gave us such a bad taste in our mouth because we're sitting there with the opportunities to win the games, and we're just, like, just let them go by. It's like wasted opportunities for the whole program to get turned around. And, like, I'm not giving up. I mean, like I said, I really do believe – you know, I think that we would beat Georgia at the beginning of the year. I felt like that in my mind, that that would be a game with a week off, and we're sitting on them, and they've got to – they have to play Alabama and then Kentucky, which is a physical game, even though Kentucky's not great. But they couldn't just focus on us like they always get to. This is the opportunity. So, you know what? Put a great game plan together. Run the ball. You know, be a balanced offense like we should be. And let's turn it around.
I agree. Dan, we appreciate the call, man. Great words there as well. If Auburn had gone into the Oklahoma and Texas A&M games with the same mentality and the same execution as they did with the Baylor game, they'd be 5-0. Easily would be 5-0. And to Dan's point, I know we got to get to break. To Dan's point about A&M having Auburn circled and that being one of your toughest games on the schedule and things like that, I totally agree. But is it wild to say that A&M didn't play that way? A&M didn't do anything crazy. They had a good defensive plan, sure, but Auburn hurts themselves more than any defense has hurt them so far this season. And A&M's offense was mid. I mean, they didn't do anything. Credit Auburn's defense for that, but A&M didn't drop 50 on you. They didn't force a bunch of turnovers. They didn't throw 80-yard bombs up and down the field all day. Auburn just couldn't get out of their own way. Auburn couldn't hear. So that's why Auburn lost. And that's what's so sickening. That's what's so hurtful to these Auburn fans that we've heard from the last 2 days is, man, it's the little things that you could so easily be undefeated. Heck, even 4-1. But you're not. You're 3-2, and you got to sit on that for 2 weeks before Georgia.
You mentioned something about Kirby Smart in the Alabama game last Saturday that I want to get to when we come back.
Let's do it. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open all show long. We take our first break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And I got a couple of minutes. Christian, you said there was something you wanted to hit on in particular with Kirby Smart and Georgia. And this will bleed over into our next segment. We will talk some more results from college football and some storylines and things from this past weekend coming up in just a couple of minutes. But something that you wanted to address with Kirby and the Dogs, because as Dan just mentioned, our caller a moment ago, I mentioned as well, and I think Mike even mentioned it at the start, this is a beatable Georgia team. Kirby Smart and the Dogs are good, but they're not great just yet.
I would still throw them in the category of great after the Tennessee game. It shows that they find a way to win when they need to. But you mentioned something that Alabama put up 24 points in the first half. Alabama won 24-21. Mm-hmm. Alabama, the Crimson Tide, did not score a point in the second half. And so as much confidence or as much hope that you have in this offense or you have in Freeze to make the adjustments and make the game plan what it needs to be in the first 30 minutes of the game, get me to the third and fourth quarter when you see what really needs to happen. Because you can predict as much as you want, or you can practice as much as you want for this, this, and this, and that's what you're going to see in the first half. And so I would expect some level of success from Auburn in the first half of this game in 2 weeks just because you've had so much time to prepare.
If you don't, you cash it in right there.
Correct. Yeah. If it's 14-17-3 at halftime, do what you need to do for the rest of the night. But if it's a 14-10 Auburn lead at halftime, or even if it's 14-10 Georgia mm-hmm. at halftime, but you feel like you still are very much in the football game, that second half is going to tell me more of what I need to know, because Kirby Smart is a defensive-minded guy. We talked about the game watching Alabama and Georgia, and he sits right where the linebackers are just about every single play, because that's how his mind works. And he's always involved with the defense just because that's what he played when he was a DB. Get to the second half and continue to make the adjustments. That's when you're going to see the level of confidence build for me with this offensive staff, because if you come out of the halftime break and Kirby makes adjustments, and then as soon as you get popped in the mouth, you go right back to where you were, that shows that that first half did nothing but give you just a little padded break not playing a team this Saturday.
And weirdly enough, you did it against Baylor, but Georgia and Kirby Smart are a much bigger beast than Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears. Speaking of other teams in college football, we'll talk about some more of those. Big scores, big results, big news as well. We talk about that and more as we're 30 minutes into hour number one.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And we're going to talk some baseball here in a little bit. But we do need to mention what Tarik Skubal just did to the Cleveland Guardians in this wild card game.
And honestly, what Gavin Williams
returned. Williams deserves his flowers too. The stats here are just absolutely absurd. They're absurd.
They are. I mean, it's 2-1 top nine right now. Tigers have the lead, runners on second and third. And credit, Christian is also very happy for seeing baseball being played the way that it should. The Tigers got a sacrifice bunt with a runner on third. It wasn't quite a suicide, but it was very much a safety squeeze down the first baseline to give the Tigers a 2-1 lead. And then there were runners on first and second, another bunt. We'll see if they can cash it in. They can't. But just seeing small ball being played the way that it needs to be played in the postseason is very, very refreshing. There are 8 combined hits in this baseball game. Tarik Skubal goes 7 2/3, only 3 hits, 1 earned, and 14 strikeouts. Gavin Williams goes 6 of his own, 5 hits, and 8 Ks. So between the two, 13 2/3 inning, 8 hits, 22 strikeouts.
Pretty ridiculous, if you ask me. Skubal, 3 of his strikeouts, the strikeout pitch, 3 of them were 100-plus miles an hour. That's the second most by a starter in the postseason since 2008 when Jacob deGrom did it.
We were talking about this game before.
Oh, sorry, since 2022 when Jacob deGrom did it. Apologies.
Okay, well, we were talking about this game before we went on air. We were sitting there watching Skubal, and I was saying, man, I've seen 95. I've seen 100 a fair few times, but I have yet to see a 93-94 mile-an-hour slider from Tarik Skubal, and then you back that up with a 87-88 mile an hour changeup.
And then when he rears back and really wants to throw it, he's hitting 102 with a four seamer. Yeah. And it's like
I'm a lefty, so I do not feel bad for any I do feel bad for any left handed batter against Tarik Skubal.
Yeah.
It's
pretty nasty work, man. It is. Well, we'll talk a little bit more baseball here in a little bit. Also, we have a full baseball power hour returning tomorrow. Our man Lindsey Crosby will be in the studio to help us get the postseason started, since we're carrying a bunch of postseason baseball here on ESPN 106.7. We're going to have the entire Reds-Dodgers series here on ESPN, which begins tonight out in Los Angeles.
Yeah, so, it's the 8 o'clock game.
Yep, so we'll have all 3 games of that series if necessary. We'll have that for you here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. And then we will have the I think we have both the divisional series and the I think we have divisional series for both NL and AL. So
okay.
I'll double check on that, but I think we have all those coming up. So a lot of postseason baseball over the next month here on ESPN once our local shows are done at night and on the weekends as well. But let's get back to some football because we are talking more Auburn as we go. And again, phone lines are open all show long. No guests today. It's fully wide open for us and for you. So give us a call, 334-321-1390. If you want to talk Auburn, if you want to talk other scores around college football or anything, storylines as well. That's kind of what we're doing right now. It started on Friday night, Christian, where the eighth-ranked team in the country, the Florida State Seminoles, who everybody had just completely put all their money on and said, yep, they're great. They beat Alabama. They're awesome. Florida State's back.
Top 10 team.
They went on the road to a 3-1 Virginia team. And I even admitted, I said, I didn't know Virginia was 3-1. In one of the weirdest, drunkest games I think I've ever seen, and I didn't watch it full on. Of course, I was on the air last week for Auburn High, but our buddy Jack Hudden was updating our listeners on the Auburn High Sports Network.
Get to third. Oh my gosh, he is.
Oh my goodness. Is that Ramirez?
Jose Ramirez gets to third with nobody out.
Mr. Cleveland himself.
Try and tie it up.
Is there a player that fits his city and team more than Ramirez right now? I mean, think of the last several years of the big moments he's had with Cleveland.
He's not there anymore. But there's a shortstop that plays for the New York Mets that I would say fit the city a little bit more. But
yeah, that's okay.
But now it is definitely, yes.
You love Jose Ramirez in Cleveland is pretty awesome. But
Francisco Lindor was pretty sick when he was there.
Yeah. Whatever, now he's a Met. And now they're at home watching everybody else play. So,
which makes me very happy.
It makes everybody happy. I mean, it is truly incredible. But, how about Virginia pulling off the upset, beating Florida State Friday night, 46-38, double overtime to do it. And just like that, Florida State seems like they've come right back down to earth.
Chandler Morris, the Virginia quarterback that many have heard his name from essentially COVID. He started at OU and then went to TCU for a couple of years and then kind of didn't have the best year in 2023. Transferred to North Texas, the old Mean Green, and absolutely lit it up. Had 31 touchdowns and 12 interceptions passing. Also had 242 yards on the ground and 4 rushing touchdowns in there as well. Then made the transfer to Virginia, and somebody that has all of the experiences in a big game like this is why Florida State was only right around a touchdown favorite. But I think a lot of that was just simply because, like the media kind of recognized, is nobody really knows what this Virginia team had. You had a couple names that you kind of recognized, and Morris didn't play outstanding, had 3 interceptions, but was still 26 of 35 for 229, 2 touchdowns, again, those 3 interceptions. But 48 carries for 211 yards, Virginia, the Cavaliers had on Florida State. Florida State had it rushing the football as well, but a crazy game that started off a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that wasn't good enough for you, an upset to start the Friday night off, how about another one where Arizona State takes down number 24 TCU 27-24?
Before that, are you a fan of the field storming with Virginia? Because
no.
It's very polarizing because I think it was incredible, but at the same time, you hate being that guy, but you had to make sure that Florida State receiver was alive.
Yeah, and because Florida State said everybody was okay, thankfully. But yeah, Virginia allowing the students to like come out of the stands and stand on the hill,
yeah,
back behind
the hill,
end zone,
basically on the back line of the end zone.
And I think they described it on the broadcast as World War Z, which is pretty much what that was. If you've ever seen that movie where the zombies are all crawling over the wall and like multiplying, that's basically what this looked like. Or a dam that opened up, full of people. Like they said it was the quickest one they've ever seen, and I kind of agree with that. But I'm also, and I think you're with me here,
field stormings are very overrated.
It's kind of getting old.
You're seeing 3 a weekend.
It's same thing with like court storming and basketball. It used to be cool.
You saw Wake Forest ready to do it against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's the 16th ranked team in the country.
back in the day, like when Indiana hits a big shot, that big shot over Kentucky, the Anthony Davis Kentucky team in Assembly Hall, and they just go crazy, that's a cool moment. When Auburn rushes the field after an Iron Bowl, that's cool. But that was also cool 10 years ago. It's just, I'm like you. When you rust the floor on a Thursday night because Grand Canyon beat somebody, it's like, all right, well, I think it's a little watered down. But regardless, Virginia beat Florida State, top 10 win, and maybe Virginia's somewhat legit. Heck, they're right now, they're one of the best teams in the ACC. So I think that says more about the conference than it does the Virginia Cavaliers. But if that wasn't enough, as I mentioned, Arizona State beat TCU 27-24. And I don't know how to describe this game, but Arizona State found a way to do it. How about outscoring TCU 10-0 in the fourth quarter? They take down 24th-ranked TCU. And then Houston had to keep their undefeated streak alive against a winless Oregon State team, and it took overtime to do it.
It did, man. TCU found every way to lose that football game.
Yeah, they did.
It was really, really poor to watch, and credit to you for confidently picking Arizona State to find a way to win this game. It was 17-0 TCU earlier, halfway through the second quarter, and then Dillingham got to the halftime break. They put up a couple late touchdowns in the second, and then, yeah, you mentioned outscoring TCU 10-0 in the fourth quarter, and, yeah, nobody wants to talk about Connor Wegman versus Malik Murphy.
Gross. Not the Maryland Malik Murphy.
No.
The other Malik Murphy. The 0-5 Malik Murphy with Oregon State.
Maryland's Malik Washington, isn't it?
I think you're right. Yeah. Who's a baller, by the way.
Very much so.
He's a baller. I think you may be right on that. We're also being called the no fun police at the moment.
That's fair.
Because of field storming and our unpopular opinion on that. But that was Friday night in college football. And that should have been the
field stormings are great until you see the video of that Virginia kid walking up to Castellanos and flipping him off while on Instagram Live or whatever. But as soon as Castellanos does anything about it, he's going to be the one that gets in trouble for it.
It's never the first person to do it. It's always the second. They're the ones that get caught. It's true.
I'm also getting fact-checked that says Malik Washington plays for the Dolphins. No, Malik Washington, there is another one that also plays for the Maryland Terrapins. He has 1,038 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, and 1 interception.
He's
Mr.
really
Jack
good.
Hutton. Thanks, buddy.
So, Friday was awesome in college football. As we continue on with other big-time results, I'll go ahead and say it. Ohio State proved that they're the number one team in the country. That win against Washington, people aren't going to respect it as much as they should. 24-6 on the road at Husky Stadium, shutting down Damon Williams and that company and that crew. Ohio State is the best team in college football. And the fact that Julian Sayin is their quarterback and he actually looks competent, 22 of 28, 208 yards, and 2 touchdowns, Ohio State's win against Washington will go down as one of the best wins in college football because I'm telling you, Washington's going to make a tear through the Big Ten. Here's what they have left. Maryland, Rutgers, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Purdue, UCLA in a battle with Oregon at the end of the year. Washington's going to do everything they can. If Indiana can't pull it off, Washington's the dark horse to make it to the college football playoff out of the Big Ten, which goes to prove why Ohio State really is that team.
Well, people have talked about how Husky Stadium in Seattle is one of the toughest places to play in the country, one of the more underrated places to play in the country. And if you're Ohio State, not only did you go out and win 24-6, not even allowing a touchdown against, again, we called it probably three of the most talented individual players in their position that Washington has in the entire country, but you do so with that being probably the most popular upset pick of the weekend, if not one of the top three most popular upsets of the weekend. And so being able to do that with 10 points in the fourth quarter, kind of to ice everything, makes you feel that much more confident in the Buckeyes to be that number one team in the country. We brought them back out. Dan and Auburn's got some more comments here. Welcome back on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, sir.
I appreciate it. I was just going to make one comment about the storming the field.
Yeah, sure.
For the Virginia game. That really did look like the fastest I've seen people run onto the field. But I think you have to look this up, but I think they said before it happened, so that they were 5-56 against top 25 teams or top 10 teams, but it might have been top 25 teams over the last however many years. So they obviously don't win big games very often.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's probably why the fans were so excited.
And that's what's unfortunate, is because you see so many of these teams do it nowadays that it almost makes the Virginia one look even less special. It makes it look even more watered down, when something like that really could be program changing. But just since you see it three times every single weekend, it kind of takes that initial shine from it.
Yeah, but for the Virginia students, for their team who never wins a big game, I guess that, for them, it was huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's just, again, it's unfortunate because we feel like, as Christian said, you see it twice a week, and especially during basketball season, you see it all the time.
Yeah. All right, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. If my research is correct here, win-loss record versus ranked opponents since it was started to be tracked according to this BetIQ website, so take this for what you will. Win-loss record against top 25 teams. Virginia, as a program, where are they? 10-36 all-time against top 25 opponents. So, yeah, I think that includes their win over Florida State, but I'm not 100%. And, yeah, we're not hating Virginia other than the way that it happened.
More so just the concept.
Make it special again.
Yeah.
Right? It's
just a fad.
Never mind. It is. I don't know. It's just one of those things you see too often, in my opinion. But it is what it is.
But again, teams like Virginia and certain ones make it to where it's like, we don't care what the media says. This was for our team and our community. And that's what makes it so cool. It's just, again, that general perspective of, all right.
Yeah.
There's another one.
Yeah. Yay. And then
and it's like if now it's not even like the number one or the number two team in the country. It's if you have a number by your name.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We'll wrap up the hour. Keep talking more big results in college football. Then we'll start talking more Auburn. Little baseball in there somewhere. The Guardians didn't score, by the way. They had a runner on third. Nobody out to tie the game.
Yeah,
I didn't see how they blew it, but they blew it.
They struck out, which, again, is a conversation of a contact hitter, man, with the infield in. If you need to lay one down, you can. Otherwise, you got to see a pitch up. He swung at three balls below the strike zone. Second one, tapper off the plate. Jose Ramirez got caught in between third and home trying to score on contact.
Oh, yeah.
Flipped it to home. Catcher was chasing him down. Faked the throw to third. Tagged out Jose Ramirez and then couldn't get a rally with two outs.
That's unfortunate. So Tigers take game one against the Guardians. San Diego's up 1-0 on the Cubs in the NL wild card as well. So we'll take a break, come back, wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. You're listening to On the Line on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Got a couple of minutes before we wrap up the hour. Again, phone lines are open all show long. No guests today, so a perfect opportunity for you to be involved in the show if you would like. We got some texts that we'll get to in the second hour. The text box for our show, 334-784-1067. Or you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Rapid fire results here. Do we start the second hour with some of these two? Because there's just not enough time for me to congratulate my friend in Happy Valley. I don't have time right now to do that.
I think properly. That might be a start to hour number two. So instead,
I think we focus on that as we're going to hash out our show schedule here for a moment. So bear with us.
Yes. I say
we focus on coaching things in the second hour because we had an SEC coach fired.
Yeah.
We had somebody promoted. He's apparently cleaning house in Fayetteville. Which is the least surprising move of all time. Plus, I have my buddy in Happy Valley. It's just, he's at it again.
He's at it again.
So let's hold off on that game.
Well, we have 2 minutes, so.
Which one do you want to hit on?
Tigers-Guardians just finished up.
Okay.
Tigers get the game one win. Padres up 1-0, end of three. right now at Wrigley Field. Your New York Yankees taking Boston Red Sox. That's the 5 p.m. game
On
ESPN.
Yeah.
Where I have to unfortunately watch Max Fried in the playoffs once again, but this time wearing a different jersey.
Yeah, imagine your team not being in the playoffs. Could not be my team. It was the last 3 years, but it's not this year. Not this year, baby. I feel very confident about the Red Sox walking into Yankee Stadium and getting that thing done.
What a matchup that is.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Battle of Southpaws with Crochet and Max Fried. Two very different pitching styles. Man, the line of this game is 6.5 runs. It's going to be an absolute doozy. And then you have Hunter Green and Blake Snell with Cincinnati and Los Angeles in the nightcap. So should be, again, the 8 of the biggest names in baseball taking the mound for these games. You have Nick Pivetta and Matthew Boyd on the mound for the Padres and the Cubs right now. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to see really, really good baseball here once again.
We had somebody text to the text box earlier, and you're not going to like this.
Uh-oh.
I think it's hilarious, though. They said, MLB is the bottom of the barrel. I'd rather watch NHL.
Usually, I honestly, at this point, I probably wouldn't disagree, but postseason baseball
is pretty awesome. When it comes to regular season, me personally, yeah, I would rather watch the NHL than regular season baseball.
That being said, the man across from me has gotten me to watch a couple postseason hockey games.
Postseason hockey's a different beast too, man. I'm telling you.
They're rather fun.
They are.
Never mind.
Basketball hockey starts in, oh my God, we're like 2.5 weeks away. Basketball and hockey start middle of October. All right. We're about to hit it. The month of October is always wild, man. That's when everything's going on.
Catch me not caring about a Tuesday night NBA game anymore.
Yeah. Those days may be gone. I'm with you on that. Well, what's not gone, I don't know. I didn't have anything for that.
Hour number one is gone.
Hour number two is coming up. We're talking more college football, more Auburn football, and a whole lot more. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. 334-321-1390.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. We got Christian Griffin across from me in the studio as well. We appreciate you being with us on what has turned out to be a gorgeous day in the Auburn-Opelika area. A little overcast and rainy this morning, but it's going to be nice today. And I think it's going to be nice the rest of the week, man. And I'm just hoping Friday night is going to be fair weather. And I think that it's supposed to be, looking at the forecast, I think about sunny and 80 throughout the day and then down to like 60-something. And so really excited for some more high school football this week. And, man, we got some big ones coming up on the schedule for our local teams and things. And so, happy Tuesday. I'm glad that you're with us. And if you missed any of the first hour of today's show, you can go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. We take our audio, post it for you on our station website. at ESPNAU.com, so you can check that out. Or wherever you get your podcast, just search On the Line, and you'll find it there as well. In hour number one, we took several phone calls from listeners and text messages, just talking more about this Auburn team, this Auburn program, and really what the future holds, especially with Georgia on the near horizon. So talked a lot about that in hour number one. Had a little baseball talk in there too, as the wild card series are underway. One game already in the books, another one is off and running, and so had a lot of fun with that. Started talking some college football. We're going to do some more of that here in hour number two, but that was in the first 60 minutes, so again, if you missed it, check it out in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Yeah, Jacob, you mentioned it. Starting off in hour number two, we're kind of finishing up that conversation around the best games of college football last week. That'll bring us into a couple coaching conversations, as Jacob, I know, has some very big thoughts and is very heartbroken over what happened in Happy Valley this past weekend. We got some SEC coaching news that we're going to discuss before at 3:30 we move into another full half hour diving into just the whole Auburn situation and what Auburn needs to do in the bye week. What confidence level are you at? What do you need to see, I guess, in practice, or if anything is important in the bye week, or is it going to simply be what really matters once you work your way inside Jordan-Hare? All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yep, so phone lines are open. Again, no guest here in the second hour, so if you want to be a part of the show, you can give us a call right now, 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390 is the phone line number to push you through to us, or you can shoot us a quick thoughts if you'd like to, and our On the Line text box at 334-784-1067.
And Jacob, you mentioned that the phone lines are open again, 334-321-1390, and that's where we go to start hour number two, as Lonnie all the way down in Lochapoca is on the line. Happy Tuesday, sir.
How about it, guys? How y'all doing?
Doing all right. Hey, is the weather the same down there in Lochapoca as it is here in Auburn?
It's the same. It's the same. Pretty much. Got a little more grass down here.
Okay. All right. What's on your mind on this Tuesday?
Man, I was going to call. I tried to get in yesterday, but it was busy, and you guys must have had a ton of callers yesterday.
We did. It was nonstop, three at a time, pretty much the whole show.
Well, I've calmed down a little bit from the weekend, but this is a clown show, guys. I mean, this is an absolute clown show. How much do you think we spent on our offensive line?
I don't think you want to know the answer.
I wasn't able to listen to the first hour, and I wasn't able to listen to the whole show yesterday. So I don't know what stats have been thrown out there. And, you know, guys, I'm a stat guy. Mm-hmm. I give some of the stats out for y'all, and I'm sure you already have heard them. But I'm just going to repeat them. First time since 2006 that we did not convert a third down. Okay, that's 20 years. First time that we started out the SEC 0-2 3 years in a row ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost to the point of thinking that if Freeze has any dignity left and integrity, that he'll resign and water down his buyout for Auburn, because this is unacceptable. I don't know how he's going to make it through the season. Obviously, if we win Saturday, that changes things. I still think he's a bum, even if we win Saturday. But let's say you lose Saturday, and then who do we got after that? Vandy?
Missouri after Georgia.
Missouri.
You have the bye week. You have Georgia at home. You have Missouri at home, who will be no doubt top 25. I mean, they're climbing the rankings as we speak, Lonnie.
I mean, how do you hold on to this guy if you've got, let's say you're 4-4 with four games left? I mean, are you cutting bait and running, or are you holding on to for dear life till the end of the season? You know, hoping that we don't make the same mistake and let's beat Bama and give him an extension. I mean, like I seriously hope that doesn't happen.
That's never happened before in Auburn history, though, right?
Yeah. I don't know, but I don't know if you guys saw a certain person's podcast or on YouTube but he had Reese Dismukes on, and he was talking about not – I mean, he was obviously, you know, criticizing the offensive line pretty hard, but he was really hammering the clapping stuff that we do on hiking the ball.
Right.
And basically was talking about that that's just lazy – that's lazy coaching. It's a lazy way of doing things. And he went into how you can do a silent count. There are a couple different ways that you can do counts to not cut. Because if you look at that game on Saturday, they were – and not even just last Saturday, the Saturday before, they are absolutely firing off on our linemen and our quarterback. It's almost like they know exactly where we're going, exactly what we're going to do, which you know that's not the case, but there's something really, really bad with that snap count and the pre-snap look that we're giving that telegraphs almost everything. And that's coaching, guys. That's horrible.
I've watched a lot of this, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Jackson only claps once, too. He does a couple fake claps, but the only time a clap is actually made is when the ball is snapped.
I mean, if you're a defensive end that's, you know, 6'5", 250, are you intimidated by that?
No.
No. And what's
and I'm not intimidated until there's, all right, we're going to go on the second clap until you jump off sides. But until then, I'm timing up the snap count, and I'm getting a full head of steam.
And half the time, Lonnie, it's fooling your own offensive line with all the false starts and jumping early penalties that you're getting right now.
Well, I'll tell you this. Arkansas, I know it had been coming for a long time, but Arkansas, they weren't scared to fire somebody midseason. And I don't like doing it. I didn't necessarily like doing it with Harsin, but we kind of had to. But I don't know how you – if we look this inept against Georgia and we get beat bad at home, somebody's got to get fired. I don't know if it's Hugh Freeze or the offensive line coach or somebody, but somebody's going to have to go. And maybe that's what does need to happen, is that the offensive line guy get fired and bring Sam Pittman or Ryan Pugh or somebody in here that can coach offensive line. I'm sure the guy's a very nice guy, but I just don't like what I'm seeing at all. So
yeah,
I'm hoping for the best and expecting the worst, as usual, as a Java Auburn fan.
And to that you say?
I say Java Q for Eagle.
Thanks so much, Lonnie. Appreciate the call all the way down there in Little Chipoca. Hopefully he can pay that phone fee, because, you know, you got to pay for long-distance phone calls.
You do, so. Yeah. Lonnie, if it makes you feel any better, I know you said you're a big stat guy. I'm sure you've seen the Auburn is 3-for-28 on third down so far in SEC play. 17 of those third downs are 3rd and 9 or longer.
That's incredible. How about this stat?
Third and 9 or longer, which Auburn is 1 of 17.
Well, I mean, the stat there is 3rd and 9 and longer. That's the problem, because most teams, professional teams, don't convert 3rd and 9 and longer. Like, being 1 and 17 on that's not shameful. It's the fact that you've had 17 attempts of 3rd and 9 and longer. That's the problem.
I have another one if you want to hear another one.
I have another one, too. Which one are you going to read?
I'm going to read Auburn's 12 Power 4 opponents.
That's what I was going to read. Yeah, that's the one that Nathan King from Auburn 247 put out. All right, ready? Here we go. 3, 2, rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Yep. Rock, paper, scissors. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Dang it.
According to Nathan, that was 4 rock, paper, scissors for those that weren't counting. Against Auburn, or against its last 12 Power 4 opponents, going back to last season, Auburn has as many 3-and-outs on its opening drives as it does total first downs, both with 7.
Say it again.
Dating back to last season, against its 12 Power 4 opponents, Auburn has as many 3-and-outs as on its opening drives as it does first downs. So of those 12 games, Auburn has 7 3-and-outs and 7 combined first downs.
You realize you can pick up like 4 or 5 first downs on one drive? Think about that. A good opening drive picks up 4 or 5 first downs in it.
And it could pick up 6 or 7.
Yeah. But instead, Auburn has picked up 7 first downs.
And not one of them this year. I forgot who it was, but sent us the text that said, and we went and looked at it. Yeah, Auburn's 3 drives against P4 teams so far this year are 9 plays for negative yards.
Yeah. And he Nathan King followed it up again of Auburn 247 who put these stats out. He says in the last 7 Power 4 road games, Auburn has 6 3 and outs to just 1 first down on opening drives, which means when you go on the road, you literally do nothing to start the game. And whether you take the football or not, you've done nothing with it. And you've just given it away.
No, it's essentially like you're having a minute and 20 second drive, and then you're showing off how far your punter can kick the ball.
Which is pretty far when Hudson gets a hold of it, or when he gets it snapped to his hands.
Yeah, when he doesn't have to scoop it up.
And run for his life.
Also, again, in those 12 Power 4 games, going back to last season, they averaged 1.16 points per drive.
Is that good?
On the opening drives.
Yeah.
They've scored twice.
You really have to...
You know how many times we watch football games and you see both teams march down the field and put up points either on a field goal or on a touchdown because that's the drive that they've scripted all week long? We saw that in the most recent one that we talked about was Georgia and Tennessee, where both teams went 7 plays, 75 yards in about 3 minutes, and it was 7-7 halfway through the first quarter, and it was, okay, all right. What both teams worked on all week worked perfectly. Now it's time to go play real big boy football. Auburn is at a point right now to where you might as well just defer both halves. We're gonna elect to play defense. Both halves.
To give ourselves some momentum.
To give ourselves a stop, because right now we trust our defense to move the football further one way than we do our offense.
The defense is scoring just as many points as the offense is.
Xavier Atkins' interception return was 72 yards. Auburn's offense in the second half put up 73.
Tells you what you need,
including
to
1 yard in the fourth quarter.
But don't worry, Christian. All week long, the Auburn offense talked about winning first down and putting themselves in a position where it's 2nd and 6, 2nd and manageable. They just got themselves in a lot of 3rd and longs.
And it's also just really unfortunate that one of the play callers, I guess the official offensive coordinator, Derek Nix, said that Auburn wants to average 4 or 5 yards per carry. But said this was said last night on Tiger Talk, that the biggest problem with the run game is the lack of explosive plays. You realize how backwards that is? let me say that again.
He's talking about explosive plays in the pass game.
He's saying that Auburn football can't get 4 or 5 yards per run because they can't get explosive pass plays. That is the complete opposite mentality that any offense has. If you want explosive plays, if you trust your receivers and you have a great quarterback, what do? You run the football, because everything you hear is, all right, you run the football and have success 5 or 6 times in a row. What happens? Those linebackers creep up. The safeties that were playing 12 to 15 yards back are now 8 to 10 yards. The corners are now trying to press a little bit more, and their eyes are in the backfield a little bit longer. That's when the play action is there. That's when the 5-out, that's when you can punch them in the mouth, because it's 2nd and 1 and you're at midfield after just driving 25 yards on 3 plays running the football. But instead, Auburn can't get 4 or 5 yards per run, which they actually are when you actually decide to get in the football.
They are. They're averaging 4.5, 5 yards a carry.
But they, according to the offense, they can't do that because they're not getting explosive plays in the passing game.
But when you hear that quote, read it one more time, please.
Derek Nix says that Auburn wants to average 4 to 5 yards per carry, and that its biggest problem with the run game is the lack of explosive plays.
When you hear that from the offensive coordinator of Auburn football, right, who we know isn't calling plays in big moments, there's no secret on who is. Okay, I said it yesterday, and I'll continue to say it, and people will see what I'm talking about. Right? Most of us, we watch it on TV and we listen to the Auburn Sports Network paired together, right? That's how we do it. That's how I recommend you do it. On the broadcasts, every time Auburn is on offense, at least once during the drive, what do? they pan over to the head coach, Hugh Freeze, who's got the headset on, he's barking away, and he's got his big play call sheet in front of him. There's no secret on who's calling plays.
Also, why is the play call sheet that big? There's 8 pages to that thing when it's a hitch and a go ball.
When Auburn runs 3 plays in their entire offense. But my point to this whole thing is when you hear that quote from Derek Nix, your offensive coordinator, who says the problem with the run game is the lack of explosive plays in the pass game, doesn't that kind of clear all of this up? I'm not saying it makes sense.
No, but it shows
you backwards.
It shows you the mindset of this team.
Correct. It at least ties it all together. It at least connects the dots of, oh, that's why Auburn doesn't run the football on first down. That's why Auburn decides to drop back and pass 35, 40 times a game, even if the offensive line can't protect Jackson Arnold, who has been solid overall, according to Derek Nix, and I don't disagree with that.
They just need to be on the same page.
They just need to be on the same page, but that totally clears all of this up. It's completely reversed in the wrong mindset. It's the wrong mindset. But that at least gives us an insight and some intel on, oh, that's why Auburn's doing what they're doing. Because he just told you what their mentality is. He told you what their game plan is. He told you what they're trying to do is we'll hit them for a 40-yard pass downfield, and while they're, what, catching their breath, we'll run the football? How dumb is that? In the SEC, you really think you're just going to fool them? You're just going to catch them sleeping? Catch them off guard? Ah, Kirby will never see this coming. Let's throw it on first down. No. That's not how this works. But if nothing else, that quote from Derek Nix on Tiger Talk last night with our friends at the Auburn Sports Network, that at least for me gives some clarity on why they're doing what they're doing. I disagree with it wholeheartedly, but you at least know why they're doing what they're doing.
Good thing is there is a complete offensive evaluation that's taking place this week. So maybe it will come to the senses of maybe if the page isn't working this way, you flip it. And flip the mentality. You can't get explosive plays in the pass game, and that's why you can't run the football.
Square peg in a round hole, man. That's what, I mean,
it will fit.
It will fit. I've seen it work before.
It worked in practice, and we saw that watching their film, it did work. So why is it not working here on Saturday?
Crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff. We have more texts to get to, probably have more calls to get to as well. 334-321-1390 is the call-in number. If you want to give us your thoughts, I know you have them, so come on in and be a part of the show. You could shoot us a text as well at 784-1067. We keep talking Auburn, and eventually we will talk more college football stuff, but we want you to be involved with the show, so come on in as we're in hour number 2 here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We just got a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067 where you can always send us your thoughts or your game picks or, you know, what you had for lunch if you want to. And phone lines are open as well, 334-321-1390. Our guy Jeremy sent us a text and said, I think the real problem is Hugh Freeze still hasn't figured out that we don't play everyone 9 times. And I read it, and I didn't fully understand where he was coming from, so I asked him to elaborate. And he said his comments last season after Arkansas, and he sent me the link, and I was quickly reminded and informed and enlightened on what exactly he was talking about. And it makes a whole lot more sense.
It's a quote that everybody's kind of shoved into the back of their memory, hoping to forget it. But
when I read it to you, you're going to remember exactly what I'm talking about. In case you forgot, and this will lead us perfectly into our next segment, where I promise we are going to talk other results in college football and some coaching things.
Maybe.
But this leads perfectly into that because there's a coach in the SEC who just got fired for losing too many games at Arkansas. But you know what game he didn't lose?
It was the game that kept his job last year.
Was the game that kept his job last year. When Sam Pittman in Arkansas came to Jordan-Hare Stadium and beat Hugh Freeze and the Tigers. Do you remember what Hugh Freeze said after that game? Freeze says, quote, "I mean no offense whatsoever to at all to Arkansas or to Cal. I love Sam Pittman. I hope he wins the rest of his games. But the hard truth is, if we played them 9 more times, we beat them 9 more times." So Jeremy's point is, he doesn't think Freeze has figured out the idea that you don't play teams 9 more times after you play them. You don't get another shot at Oklahoma or Texas A&M, Hugh.
Which you're
0-2 against both of them.
Well, you beat A&M last year, but...
Well, yeah, that's true. You're 0-2 against Oklahoma and 1-1 against A&M. I forgot about that quote until he sent it to me just now. And that still goes down as one of the more wild, just incompetent quotes I think I've ever heard from a head coach of any sport at any level. Of, well, I know we just lost, but, you know, I think if we play them 9 more times, we just beat them 9 more times. Which is pretty wild, if you ask me. And thank you, Jeremy, for digging that one up from the grave.
Not thank you, no. Credit to you, but...
Credit to you, but also...
Don't do it again.
Yeah.
No, that's painful. It really... There's a lot of... Is there a coach in the SEC right now that has as many quotes that take off and do social media numbers other than what we've heard the last 2 years?
But to his point, to Jeremy's point, it's like... You understand you don't play these teams multiple times in the same season, but something you've talked about, Christian, is every time Coach Freeze gets in front of a microphone following a loss, he acts like it's just, well, we didn't get him last week, but we'll get him this week. Ah, man, that's tough. We probably should have done this. Don't know how we're going to do that, but somebody should start running the ball more. I don't know who, but...
He's like one of the Monday morning podcasters. That's like, this is why it didn't work. If you would have just done this, it would have been good. He talks as if he's one of us and not the one that actually controls the decisions.
Wild, man. Wild. Who was that that just went deep in Chicago?
That was Seiya Suzuki and Michael Bush.
Back-to-back?
Yep.
Wow. 2-1. 2-1 Cubbies over the Padres. Bottom of the fifth. In the National League Wild Card Series. We'll talk more college football things right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what's been a very fun but kind of sporadic show, free-for-all Friday-esque on this Tuesday afternoon, which, coming off the weekend that we just had, I think that's okay.
It's been a free-for-all week so far.
It really has, and we're not even 2 days through, and we expect the rest of the bye week to be just like that. And before we do talk about some of the other big results, God, it's been the longest tease ever of us talking about other games in college football. And
this was on our rundown. This was the start of the show.
This was our 2 o'clock segment.
Our 2:15 segment.
We've officially made it through the Friday night games also. That's all we did was the Friday night games of college football. We're going to get there in just a moment, I swear, because there are a couple of things that I do want to hit on in particular with some of the biggest games of the weekend and coaches being fired and other ones who probably should be fired and things like that. But I discovered a stat on the internets from...
The worldwide interweb?
Yeah, from Cam Meller, who he works for PFSN, the College Football Playoff Predictor. I don't know PFSN. I don't know who that is, but he has a really cool stat that he tweeted out a few hours ago.
Cool? I guess that, no.
Oh, I think it's really cool.
It is.
I think it's awesome.
I forgot that it was this one.
This is, according to PFF, right? The highest average yards before contact on designed runs with FBS offensive lines. I'll say that again so it sinks in. This is the highest average yards before contact for a running back on designed runs from offensive lines at the FBS level. So basically, this is a list of the best run-blocking offensive lines in college football.
Yeah.
That's basically what this is, okay? Air Force leads the country. Shocker. They're running plays. Whoever's carrying the football is averaging 1.87 yards before a defender touches them. That's incredible. They're picking up nearly 2 yards before somebody even thinks about laying a hand on them, okay? That's incredible. James Madison is second. Utah's third. Arizona is tied at third with Utah. Vanderbilt is at fifth, 1.61 yards before contact, thanks to your offensive line. Kansas is at sixth. Auburn is at seven, 1.55. Auburn design run plays are picking up 1.5 yards per carry before a defender even touches them. Ohio State's at 8, Texas State at 9, and Navy is at number 10. Auburn's offensive line and run blocking is a top 10 unit in the country.
Which is what we've talked about all season long. When this team doesn't have to think about protection and can just get downhill and use brute strength to turn defenders or get into the second level. You've seen so many of those videos. You saw it against Baylor. You saw it even more against Ball State and Alabama State, or South Alabama. I've called them Alabama State the entire time this season, but South Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Of guys getting to the second level and just running over linebackers to where it's Jeremiah Cobb against a safety. And if he makes a miss, it's a touchdown. It's a house call. If not, it's a 12-yard gain. But 1.55 yards per carry before contact, to where if you then fall forward because of that tackle, it's 3.5 or 4 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Much less you break off of the one-handed would-be ankle tackle that we trust our SEC running backs to be able to do, you get into the second level. And even if you don't make somebody miss in the second level, that's 6 yards. That's 2nd and 4. 2nd and 5 at worst, even 2nd and 6 looks pretty dang good from what we have, what we've had, and how we are 3 for 28 in SEC play on third downs and 1 for 17 on third downs that are 3rd and 9 or longer. Even if that stat was 1.55 yards per carry, it'd be 3rd and 7.
And what gets me, too, is when you look at the Auburn running backs, just look at Jeremiah Cobb for a second. The big play potential is there. He has long carries of 15 yards, 44 yards, and 46 yards on the season are his splits so far for Auburn. Which means he has big play potential, which Auburn clearly just doesn't want unless it's through the air, which is just absurd. Jeremiah Cobb, again, a 15-yard run, 44-yard run, and a 46-yard run. Damari Austin, in his limited time, 11-yard run and a 15-yard run.
Jeremiah Cobb is 34th in the country with yards per carry at 6.9.
That should tell you a lot. It tells me that the offensive line's doing what they're supposed to do. Darrell Robinson, his longest carry this year is 54 yards. And I know he's obviously out and not playing at the moment. But my point here is, you're looking for these explosive plays, these chunk plays, these exciting momentum-building plays on offense. You're getting them on the ground. You've had very few through the air. But you've got them on the ground. And Pro Football Focus is telling you, which is the deepest, most accurate analytics in the world for college football, they're telling you the strength of your team, which goes back to what we talked about yesterday, where a head coach and his staff must call plays to the strength of your team, no matter what sport it is. The analytics are telling you, run the damn ball.
According to TeamRankings.com, which is a site that I love to use because it can show you just about every single statistic on
there. That website
was awesome. What I just got from Jeremiah Cobb. What would you guess? This obviously includes sack yardage with runs, because in college football, that's how that works. And so Jackson Arnold losing 7 yards and a sack counts as rush yards for him, counts as team rush yards. Where do you think Auburn ranks in the country, in FBS, of the 136 teams of total yards per carry? Again, with the lack of running the football and with the amount of sacks, where do you think Auburn ranks?
And just total?
Just total yards per carry.
Oh, and just yards per carry? Auburn's got to be a top 20 team.
Including sacks.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. And their lack of running the football.
God, I don't know.
I am.
This includes sack yardage?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Where it's
I don't even know what to guess. My guess would be low because of how many times he's gotten sacked.
That was my thought as well. I figured that it would be literally 70th.
Can I ask what that? Did you say what that number is? What is Auburn? What's the number?
I haven't said it yet. But okay. Even with all of the sacks, it's 4.6.
That's pretty good.
That is 51st.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound great, but then you think about how many times this offensive line has had Jackson Arnold sacked 14 times in the last two games.
Some of those where he had zero chance.
Go back and watch the 4th-and-1 play, y'all, if you haven't seen it on social media. Jackson Arnold has the ball in his hands and doesn't have time to look up. And for those that haven't seen it, go watch the end of that play where Mason Murphy's trying to help him off the field or help him off the turf.
Yeah, it'll tell you all you need to know.
Jackson swats his hand away. And it gets up and walks to the sideline. But 14 sacks, and there were also, what, 4 more against Ball State?
Yeah.
Even with all of that, you still are 51st in the country in 4.6 yards per carry. You're actually tied for 44th, if you want to look at it that way. So even after everything, every analytic tells you, man, this team can really beat you if they run the football the way they should.
Mm-hmm. It's really unfortunate for Darrell Robinson, man. I really hate it for him. He's got 3 carries on the year. You know what I mean? Like that freak accident or incident or I don't even know if it's an injury, if that's the proper word to use for that, but medical incident that he had. I mean, that really is unfortunate. If there is a positive there, you're maybe thinking medical redshirt at this point if he is not able to get back and be active. I don't know. But you said it. Damari Austin, averaging almost 5 yards a carry. Jeremiah Cobb, averaging 7 yards a carry.
Yet they touched the ball combined in SEC play, running the football 21 times.
I said this yesterday. We get paid to put this into words, and I'm really struggling to do it.
Did you feel like Le'Veon Moss last week for A&M got the football every single snap? I didn't think so.
No.
He was obviously a big name and got his fair share of carries, but I didn't feel like it was, all right, you got to feed the bell cow because that's the only thing that worked. He had as many carries last week as both running backs have had for Auburn in the A&M game and the Oklahoma game combined. Which goes to show you can run the football, man.
He had only, what, the one big play?
Yeah.
The one big, what was it, 40 yards or something like that that he ripped off? I mean, he still ended up with, he was north of 100 yards,
I think,
right?
He was almost 150, if not at 150.
Yeah, something like
but
that.
But still, it wasn't like, all right, that's the one game plan, is you have to stop Le'Veon Moss because he's going to get 40 carries a game. But you see the impact that he had and how that opened up everything.
No, you know what the worry was about the A&M offense going into the game was the 2 star wide receivers that they have in Mario Craver and Casey Concepcion, who Concepcion got his yard, sure. Neither one of them scored. Neither one of them beat you. Longest reception, just pulled it up. Casey Concepcion, do you want to guess what it was?
Ooh.
24 yards.
I was going to say, I remember there being one early in the third.
24 yards for Concepcion, 17 yards for Craver, because that's what everybody and their mother talked about going into this game for Texas A&M, was Marcel Reed and his 2-star wide receiver. So what did Auburn do? Auburn did their best to shut them down. They limited them and didn't get burnt. So what did A&M do? They ran the ball. They ran the ball.
They made an adjustment.
They adjusted and ran the ball. Le'Veon Moss, 21 carries, 139 yards, had a touchdown in there as well, and A&M wins the ball game because of it.
Yet you still didn't feel like he got the ball every single time, which goes to show you what 21 carries should feel like in a football game.
21 carries in a D1 SEC game, he's going to get his. I don't care who the running back is. I don't care if he plays for A&M, Kentucky, or Miami of Ohio. They're going to get their yards and make their impact if you give them the ball. And so based off the stats, again, that we're talking about for what seems like 8 days in a row, right? From the stats from the Auburn running backs and the stats that we read you to start this segment about the Auburn offensive line, which, I lost it. Hold on. Auburn is a top 10 offensive line in the country when they run design running plays. This is not quarterback scrambles. This is not all that mess. On true design runs, Auburn's offensive line in the FBS is ranked seventh in the country with yards before contact by the ball carrier.
At over a yard and a half.
At 1.55 yards. Make it make sense. I can't do it.
For those, I don't know the exact number, but I remember talking with one of my buddies a couple of years ago when he was just now like watching Auburn football, wasn't an Auburn fan. He was actually my roommate from Minnesota, actually. And he moved down here to Auburn and was having a conversation with me and was like, so I've heard a lot about this Tank Bigsby guy. And they said that he's supposed to be really, really good, but he only gets like 70 yards per game and is only averaging like 3.5-4 yards per carry. And I showed him a stat of how he led the country in yards gained after contact. And he was almost dead last in the country in yards gained before contact. He was averaging like negative 0.4 yards before contact. Basically, he was getting touched by a defender in the backfield and was still able to get 4 yards per carry. This is the exact opposite of we're getting 4.5-6 yards every single time you run the football. Just the stubbornness is for some reason there of, yeah, but that only happens if we're able to throw the football.
It's truly amazing. I looked up, because I'm not smart enough for this, I looked up synonyms for the word baffling, because that's the word that keeps coming back to me. Frustrating, yeah, that's it. Impeding, yeah, kind of. I don't know. There's a lot of these. Baffling as in frustrating. Yeah, baffling for me is like confusing. And I genuinely struggle to put it into words on what you're supposed to do or why you can't. Why can the guy making millions of dollars not see this, but two 25-year-olds in a radio studio can see this?
I'm telling you, man, if Auburn would hire me to stand next to Freeze and just say, hey, coach, I can feel it. I can feel what's about to happen. I've seen enough Auburn. I've watched enough games, and I've felt it to where, all right, the momentum's changing right here. Change whatever you're doing, because it's happening, coach.
Don't worry. Spectre in the text box says, just hire Lane Kiffin. That'll solve all the problems. Said, if you want to keep DJ Durkin, hire Lane Kiffin right now. The defense is happy, and you retain your current and future recruiting class. Do it now.
Before we head to break, we have a minute or two.
Do we?
Oregon, Penn State, James Franklin rant, go.
Oh, you want me to do it right now? Oh, come on. Let me do it after the break. Let me do it after the break on the way out. We'll rapid fire because we got to talk LSU Ole Miss. We'll talk Oregon, Penn State. We'll talk, I don't know. All right, throw it to break. We're back right after this to wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a fun show today, man. If you missed any of it, go back, catch it with the podcast, ESPNAU.com. We've talked Auburn. We've talked some SEC, a little bit of baseball, and a whole lot more. So If you missed it, again, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Tomorrow, we're going to try and hit on some more of these college football
results. We'll be able
results.
To actually dive into results.
Because I really want to, because again, we barely mentioned Ohio State, Washington. I'm about to go in on Oregon, Penn State for a moment, but there's more to talk about than what I'm going to talk about. LSU, Ole Miss, Bama, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Tennessee, Mississippi State, USC, Illinois, Notre Dame, Arkansas. I mean, there's a lot of games that we meant to cover today. And look, tons of great phone calls, tons of great text messages. We love that. We prioritize that for a reason. So thank you to everybody who has been involved today. But I can't go another day.
No.
I can't. I physically can't wait another day to say what I have to say.
Let me D-Wade your LeBron. Throw the lob to you.
Here we go.
Number three, Penn State suffered a 30-24 loss on Saturday to the sixth-ranked Ducks of Oregon in double overtime after erasing a 14-point deficit. In the first play of double overtime, Drew Aller threw an interception, which ended the game, but dropped Coach James Franklin to 2-21 against teams ranked in the top six of the AP Top 25.
He's also now 4-21 during his time at Penn State against teams ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll and top 10 teams in conference in the Big Ten, you know, the ones that matter the most. James Franklin is the head coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions, is now 1-18 against top 10 teams in his own conference. Our friend Lee Sterling comes on here on Fridays, and when he says the wrong team's favored, he's got a certain tone and an uptick to his voice, right? Instead of wrong team favored, I just say one word to describe James Franklin. Loser. James Franklin is a loser. James Franklin simply cannot win the biggest games. And I've been screaming this into a microphone or to anyone that's willing to listen basically since he's been there. And for the first time ever, I have true support. Not just facts, not just numbers, not just records, because that hasn't been good enough for some people. The man himself has finally admitted it.
In the post-game press conference,
James Franklin says, quote, "I get that narrative. And it's really not a narrative. It's factual. It's the facts." How about that? I will be completely honest, and I respect him for finally admitting that he's a bad coach in big games. They had every chance to win that game, and they absolutely blew it because they waited 3.5 quarters to do anything on offense. They waited for Oregon to go up 2 scores, and they were like, "Ah, crap. We're going to get beat by a freshman. Can't have that." And then they just flipped it on, and Penn State started playing good football. And then your senior quarterback, the one you paid to come back to Happy Valley to make everything better and to get you to the national title that you said you can do, and he's the one that threw a pick to lose the game. That's just so unfortunate. My family was really upset Saturday, but they were okay. James Franklin, you're a good coach, man. But you're a loser in the big ones. And I think Penn State's better. I think it's time to really have that conversation in Happy Valley.
There we go.
Boom. I'm good. I'm better.
There we go. We can talk about how good of a coach Dan Lanning is tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. He's a really good coach.
And how there was a chance for the team.
No, don't say it. Don't say it. Okay, we got to go. Don't hurt the people on the way out. We're back tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.